Tequila. This is Terror Dave Fuentes from Terror from Beyond the Daves. You can follow my blog along with the other Terror Dave, David Alba, at terrordaves.com. Follow us on Twitter at Terror Daves. Like us on Facebook and drop us a line at terrordaves@ymail.com. Many people know me through the site, but what people don't know is that two decades before the Terror Daves would even meet, it was Dave and Jason that used to dish on horror. I met Jason Lucas about 23 years ago at a local grocery store we worked at as teenagers, and we have been talking and dishing on horror movies ever since. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Jason.
Hey, everybody. It's Jason Lucas, fellow horror fan and longtime friend of Dave Fuentes. We had our first conversation over the return of Michael Myers, and that was the beginning of a long friendship, many nights of horror and drunkenness. We like to make B-movies A-movies by adding just a little bit of alcohol to comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable. Like a shot to the head, it's Terror on Tequila.
Many middle-aged horror fans like myself will recall the old mom-and-pop video stores that existed back in the day. That was, of course, before the big conglomerates like Blockbuster, Hollywood Video, and Family Video came in and rendered them obsolete. And, of course, now those are being rendered obsolete in favor of Redbox or streamlining. But back then, you had the privately owned video stores that actually was a godsend to horror fans like ourselves because they offered rare and unusual horror films that many of us had never heard of and were being introduced to for the first time. My local Homewood Video had actually had several of those, including The World of Dario Argento, which introduced me to Italian horror, which is a love I still have to this day. But my friend Jason here actually grew up in a neighboring town of Dalton where he, too, was introduced to some rare features through his video stores. Tell us about that.
In the classic age of videotapes, the mid-80s, we had Video Villa, R-Video, Pro Visual, where we would go. It would be like kids in a candy store. You could walk them in down the aisles and see titles like The Prowler, Scream Bloody Murder, Bloody Birthday, Funhouse, Terror on Tape introduced me to a lot of horror movies. That particular movie was a big influence on my love for horror. It expanded my horizons. Microwave Massacre was another title I remember, Dave.
Massacre is the operative word today, actually, Jason, because today we are doing a special Terror on Tequila tribute to massacre films. Now, we're not talking about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which, of course, is the quintessential massacre film, and actually was introduced to me by Jason. I even mentioned that in my blog after I met Gunnar Hansen earlier this year. But today we're going to actually feature, there's actually been several titles, as Jason mentioned, Microwave Massacre. There's actually a whole bunch of massacre films. You could pretty much make a whole night of it. Tonight we're going to feature four lesser-known horror films with the word massacre in the title. And helping us on our way is going to be a special beverage tonight, which will be fixed by our bartender, Jason Lucas. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, we are having Margarita Massacre tonight, people. Just whip up a margarita or another drink of your choice. I've also got on hand some of my infamous Jello Jigglers. They are made with Stoli's vodka, and we will enjoy them tonight with some massacre movies, and we are going to get on the road.
Few people know that the Texas Chainsaw Massacre was actually not the only massacre that took place in Texas. There actually was another one that took place about 11 years later, and that is the Nail Gun Massacre. Now, if anybody out there has not seen this movie, I strongly urge you to. However, please go back to the beverage of choice before you start viewing. We just viewed Nail Gun Massacre. What do you think of it?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's really, really bad, but it's one of those movies that's so bad, it's so damn good.
This is really an enjoyable movie, folks, if you've got the right amount of alcohol in your system and on hand to back you up. It will mess with you.
It actually helps if you're right with the right crowd. This is what I would call a drinking party movie, wouldn't you? I mean, isn't it good for like a group setting?
It's hysterical on multiple levels. You really have to have patience. It really does move quickly, people, but you've got to have patience with bad acting, bad gore, bad direction, lots of TNA, gratuitous. It's just all over the place. The plot is shallow, but you will enjoy it.
But other than that, it's awesome. And speaking of the directing, there actually is two directors for this movie, believe it or not.
Oh, my God.
Bill Leslie and Terry Lofton. Now, Terry Lofton actually was a crew member for the Dukes of Hazzard, but just because you work on the set of a TV show doesn't mean you need to make a movie, as this one clearly illustrates. The movie itself came out in 1985. Now, that was actually kind of at the end of the slasher golden era. Most people will agree that slasher movies had their heyday from 1978 to 1984. So this one kind of came at the end of the cusp. But, oh, man, it's just a lot of fun. And we just laughed throughout the entire thing. There's a lot of death scenes. And the funny part is I think just about every one of them is unnecessary, wouldn't you?
Well, there's a million of them. Right from the beginning, you're seeing everything from rape scenes to people being shot with nail guns. But the thing is, the way that the people are killed is just so ridiculous. You can't die from these type of wounds. You're really laughing hysterically throughout the whole movie. It's really a gut-wrenching movie, but you are going to enjoy it nonetheless.
Yeah, I think one person actually got killed from getting shot with a nail gun in the elbow. And then just literally collapsed dead with, like, in a pool of blood.
In the shoulder.
Yeah.
People were shot in the breast, which I don't know how you can get a big-breasted chick. Let's just say
she had the padding and it wouldn't have killed her.
I mean, people were, like, standing still and letting this person shoot nails into them. The nails were rubber, folks.
I think the scene that I like the best is when the guy gets shot with a nail and then just sort of casually lays on top of the grill and sits there and cooks.
Yeah.
With no resistance.
Yeah, we've got a guy falling down and being shot just in the face and then falling over onto a grill and letting himself be cooked.
Well, the movie deals with a woman in the beginning. Like Jason said, straight out of the gate, the movie starts. And it starts with a rape scene, which takes place on a construction site with a group of men and a redhead. So it's a bunch of rednecks banging a redhead. And then the rest of the movie deals with the perpetrators and actually other people for absolutely no apparent reason being killed off by a mysterious person in camouflage wearing a motorcycle helmet and talking with a voice synthesizer like a Darth Vader and quipping like Freddy Krueger.
It's really bad. I mean, it's hard to even decipher what the person's saying.
You can't understand it.
But you've got a guy in camouflage driving around in a bright yellow hearse with a huge air gun.
And what are the police doing while this is going on? Tell us about the law enforcement of this town.
It seems like it's a rural town.
There's
gravel roads. Yeah, it's just fields and rural, just horrible houses on stilts, barely.
The same house,
by the way.
Used for every character. Go on.
That's right. Just the most horrendous atmosphere. You're in Texas. There's one policeman who dresses the same every day. He's not even dressed in any fatigues. He's just walking around slowly, investigating, leaving the bodies out where he finds them, wondering what to do. And the first thing he does is call the local doctor, who doesn't seem to be associated with any hospital.
Including associated with any actual medical license. The guy wears, literally the whole movie, he's like a denim ad for Lee Jeans.
Lee Jeans.
He wears Lee Jeans with a jean jacket. This is the doctor. And the only time you see him not out there in the field with the cop, basically telling the cop how to do his fucking job, he's like sitting inside with his Texas Instruments, and that's the only way I could describe his computer, people. Yeah, and just saying, gee, I wonder, it's weird because so many of these people all died who worked at the construction site, but I can't see a correlation here. It's just bizarre. One of the interesting things about it, I mean, it's even funny, the acting is terrible. I mean, and how terrible. There's even a scene in the local store where whoever the shop girl was who showed up at that local shop, what would you call that store?
It was a horrendous general store. It was just like, it had five cans of beans on the shelf and this little old lady behind the counter writing the tickets out.
Well, that little old lady behind the counter actually was a last-minute selection and was the grandmother of one of the filmmakers. And she actually is reading her lines directly from a steno or a notebook right there in front of her that's being sort of hidden by a box until somebody takes the box away and you see it. But she's literally just reading her lines. And, it's actually, that's the kind of thing that you have to see in this movie. I mean, it's just so ridiculous, but so blatantly ridiculous. It's almost like the Plan 9 of Outer Space of slasher films.
Yes.
It is so bad, it's funny, and it just goes from there. I also would recommend, if you ever do see this movie, and I strongly urge you to do it, go get the DVD, because the extras are actually just as fun as the movie themselves, the special features. They do a documentary with the filmmaker. He is just this good old boy that you cannot help but like. And God bless him. The guy, I give him credit. He went out there. He really tried. And that's the only way to make these kind of movies. You have to actually, you can't try to make a stupid movie. You actually have to try to make a really good movie. But then when it comes out stupid, it's genius. And that's what happened in this case. This guy came in there, tried to make this great movie. And he's so earthy. And when he talks, it's so funny. Because like Jason was saying earlier, the nudity is just completely ridiculous. I mean, not that we complain about nudity. Let's face it, we all like to see it. But tell us about, like, the girl in the beginning.
Well, at the beginning, there's a girl being raped in a pile of dirt on the construction site. Halfway through the movie, there are two guys and two girls out trying to have a picnic in the middle of nowhere. And two of the guy and the girl leave, and they're having sex against a tree, completely nude. They're shot with nail gun massacrist. And it's just ridiculous. There's frontal nudity.
Right. The guy just lays down, and he looks like who? Rob Blagojevich.
He looks like Rob Blagojevich.
So picture Rob Blagojevich laying down, maybe 20 years younger, with full frontal.
With more hair on his back than actually on his head.
I don't know about that. Did you see the hair on his head? It was too big for
his head. Yeah, he looked like a Lego man.
That's exactly what he looked
did.
Like.
And you just snapped the hair on the top.
That is it. And then the girl just sort of casually lays on his naked body as he sprawled out.
Yeah, they're shot from behind by the nail gun killer.
Or there's another scene where this girl is literally brushing her hair topless for, I mean, just like 5 minutes. And then when you watch the extras, the guy actually doing the movie is like, you know, it was the darnest thing. The guy, the cameraman, he just kind of stood there, and it was taking him all day because he kept wanting to talk to her while they're filming. And I'm thinking, yeah.
He's filming this girl's titties while she's while she's combing her hair at the mirror.
Yeah. Oh, I don't think that took. I better take another take. Take 50. Let's go, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, the movie it's fun. It's gratuitous, obviously. The murder scene's just a total riot.
And there's a scene where they go to a Dairy Queen and order grilled cheese and fries.
But no, you forgot the precursor is when the girlfriend says to him, you promised me you'd take me someplace nice.
Yeah.
And someplace nice was
Dairy Queen.
Dairy Queen, yeah. That's telling you about the class of this kind of movie and the actual town that this is in.
Yeah, it's bad. They're doing it on the top of the car. The guy comes along and shoots him from behind. It's ridiculous. People just stand there and let the guy shoot him.
Yeah, and that's literally what it is. Or get shot with a nail in a place, part of your body that you don't even need, and then die.
What's funny is where they're shot, you could not possibly die from or get that amount of blood.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. I will give him credit for this. The blood looked realistic, even though it wasn't realistic how much of it came out from a single nail shot. But, it's definitely a slasher at its worst best. And definitely worth checking out. I mean, it is definitely a hoot. We laughed throughout the whole thing. And I think we probably would have done it even without the alcohol. But the alcohol does help because it makes it even funnier.
It's not a dull movie, folks. It's enjoyable, really.
It's pretty much nonstop action.
And absolutely.
Yeah, and we actually have, this is one that Jason and I actually have watched before, Under the Influence.
Oh, yes. We enjoy it.
Yeah, we definitely drink and nail drive.
That's right. And the ending of the movie will just blow your mind. It's unbelievably ridiculous.
It's almost like a Charlie's Angels episode with like the gaudy car chase and the bad music.
They're going 30 miles an hour through a dirt road.
Yeah, you can definitely tell that one of the filmmakers had background in 70s TV. But, it's definitely worth checking out, I would say, absolutely. I don't know. What would you rate this movie, Jason?
Oh, man, do we have a rating system?
I think we should come up with one. I think that we should come up with a rating system that corresponds with the locale and a drink of its choice. So I'm going to go with, I'm going to give this 4 moonshine shots and a Southern Comfort.
What about a Jell-O Jiggler?
What is a Jell-O Jiggler? Does anybody out there know what a Jell-O Jiggler is?
I don't know.
Tell us what a Jell-O Jiggler is. I know what it is because I just had one. But you tell us what it is. Tell everybody else what it is.
All kind of folks make Jell-O into different kind of shapes. I just pour it into a cup and eat it out with my long
Jell-O
tongue.
Jell-O Jigglers are basically Jell-O shots. But really, really strong.
Yes.
Sort of like Jell-O shots on crack.
Yeah.
And so we did have a few of those before this movie, too, which obviously did help, I think. Definitely I would say this is a movie to check out and do so with a group of friends. It's definitely a party movie. It's that fun. So if you're a horror fan looking for some 80s, just 80s at its worst or best, this is it.
Nail Gun Massacre.
And it does take place in Texas. And I think, I was reading too, that I guess this is originally an 80-page script cut down to 25, so I could just imagine. And surprisingly, I guess Texas Chainsaw Massacre wasn't the influence. It was actually, this is the influence of the movie. It was watching a group of construction workers have a nail gun fight. And they actually do feature that in the movie, which is so funny because you have these people that are getting killed basically from getting shot with a nail, you know, in their pinky. Meanwhile, this one guy gets shot directly in the balls and is like, that was fun. We should do that again tomorrow. But I will tell you this, and this is going to segue into thing. One of the books Jason likes was Terror on Tape, actually, which is one of, yeah, Terror on Tape. I want to talk about it. A lot of people talk about horror movies, but they don't talk about books. So this might be a good time to talk about books. Terror on Tape is a general horror book. It gives this movie 1 star and pretty much calls it crap. The problem is that this is my problem with general horror books. You kind of have this thing where, you know, you can't make a horror book that has The Exorcist and Nail Gun Massacre. Because obviously The Exorcist is going to get, what, 4 stars? Nail Gun's going to get 1. But if you go to the slasher books, and we have quite a few of them, that are out there. You have a few choices that are out there. They will give this one high marks. So all I'm going to say is that you should definitely check it out. One of the new slasher books I got actually says it's getting a following, so maybe we can help with that. This book, I just got this book from Christmas from the other day. It's called The Mammoth Book of Slasher Movies. And in this book, they specifically state that this movie is actually gaining new fans. So we hope that we can actually assist with that and garner even more fans to Nail Gun Massacre.
You can't go wrong with Terror on Tequila.
On the subject of massacres, let's jump 24 years and about as far away from Texas as you can get. The latest feature that we checked out was Reykjavik Harpoon Whale Watchers Massacre.
Yeah, Iceland.
Yes, this was actually billed as Iceland's first slasher. But then after it seemed to bomb at their box office the first week or two, they changed it around and called it a thriller, which is their word for horror and thriller.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, a thriller. Can you say that?
Thriller.
Heiken, schlecken, deiken, meiken.
Yes.
Yes, it's Iceland. And actually, it's not, don't let the title fool you. It kind of reminds me a lot of I Married a Monster from Outer Space. You hear a title like that, you think, oh, God, this movie's going to be shit. But this movie actually was good. I would definitely say that it is definitely better than anything that's been coming out of the United States in the last couple of years, because there ain't nothing good coming out of the United States. But it's definitely worth checking out. It's basically Texas Chainsaw Massacre at Sea, and even features Bubba from the original Texas Chainsaw.
Yes, Gunnar Hansen.
Gunnar Hansen, who makes a very brief appearance as Captain Pietor in this installment. And I love this movie. I think it actually was a surprise to me. I remember seeing it at the video store and thinking, oh, God, you know, there's nothing else. What the heck? And I have to say I was pleasantly surprised. It's got a lot of clever death scenes. There's plenty of blood. There's also a lot of just things you don't normally see, like an orca dragging people underwater and basically somebody actually getting harpooned with a really great point of view shot.
Yeah, whenever you think something is going to happen, the opposite happens.
Yeah, it's clever, and it you know, they basically, the premise is this group of whale watchers goes out on a whale tour, and then one of the people on the boat actually causes the death of the captain, so they're kind of stuck out there in sea and then get rescued, or at least they think they're rescued, by a group of hillbilly slash fishbillies who pick them up and then proceed to try to kill them all.
Yes, originally they all joined this whale-watching excursion. It was a variety of different people from different countries. You had French, you had a black guy from where?
I don't know where he was from. He did.
He had an accent.
He had an accent. This movie was definitely, that is something really weird about this film. Virtually nobody in this film can talk to each other because they all come from different countries.
You had a Japanese family.
You had a Japanese family. You had the Englishman, Scotsman. You had, you know, basically just from all over the place, Frenchmen.
Some Icelanders, it sounded like.
Icelanders, yeah. And basically what this was kind of the answer to, it was basically kind of a giving the finger to Greenpeace. Iceland's economy was based on whaling, and this movie was basically, because of international pressure, they had to stop their whale industry, which of course really hurt their economy. And this movie is kind of a giving the finger to the rest of the world, basically.
Well, the main villains of the movie were a family of whalers. That it was a mother and 2 sons who had their own whaling boat, and apparently their father was gone. But they resented the fact that they had lost their means of livelihood. So they were obviously demented. These people were very twisted, and one thing led to another, and the two parties collided, you could say, and the mayhem began right there. The massacre, actually. Almost immediately, the movie takes on a new form.
Yeah, as soon as they get picked up on the boat, it's almost immediate.
Yes.
You know, there's no...
You know who the villains are. You know that they're screwed up. You know the background. The movie's very easy to follow, but at the same time, it really does throw you for a loop. Every time you think something, you could say good, is going to happen, the next thing happens and takes you onto another line of the story. And the way the story ends is pretty shocking, actually, but pretty cool, I will say. From a horror perspective, this is one of the good ones.
Yeah, I think it was funny how the Frenchman basically... fucked everything up. So
yes.
Basically, Icelanders think the same about the French as the United States.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Who stole the show, though, was...
Gunnar Hansen.
Well, yeah, for the 7 minutes that he was riding the boat and his dialogue was dubbed in, he sure stole the show. No, it was actually this Japanese girl, Endo.
Yes.
There's this wealthy Japanese couple, and they bring along their assistant, who they just completely subjugate and boss around all day.
Stupid girl, stupid woman.
Yeah, and she basically takes this horrific situation and is like, oh, hell no, I'm going to totally... completely turn this to my advantage, and I just thought she was brilliant through the whole. She really makes the whole movie. She's clever, conniving. I love the part where her female employer is all in shock, and she basically just says, "Oh, here, your grandfather was a kamikaze. Here, go blow yourself up."
Yeah,
you know, she just, well, I take your wallet and your identity. So yeah, the whole thing was just, it was very cleverly done.
Interesting death scenes with a harpoon, with a flare gun.
Yeah, flare gun in the eyeball.
Yeah.
You had the harpoon point of view shot.
Yes.
You had the one scene where there's like three people skewered and then they blow up because of the woman with the kamikaze. You had some really, you had a head getting chopped off from a cleaver being blown.
Yes.
So yeah, you really did have a lot of, there's a lot going on in this movie, a lot for a horror fan to enjoy. Even if nobody's speaking, there is some dubbing, just so you are aware, and when they are speaking English, you can hardly understand them.
Right.
But you do know what's going on. It's not like you can't follow it. It's just, it's really clever, and I would definitely say, don't let the title fool you. Give it a shot, for
yes.
sure. Now, Gunnar Hansen, I actually did see him. I met him last March at the Horror Hound Convention in Columbus, and... of course, you know, you meet Gunnar Hansen, you want to talk about Texas Chainsaw, but me, no, I talk about this movie. So I come up there and I told him, I said, how much I really enjoyed this movie. And he said, like, well, I'm not surprised. It's basically Texas Chainsaw at sea. And I said, yeah, I can see that. And he said, well, he said, it was actually kind of hard to film because he said there was this big 6-month break in between filming and all of us had to come back and try to remember what we were, what our characters were, what we were doing. But then when I watch this movie, he's barely on it, and it's kind of like, well, what did you have to remember?
His character is very important in the movie because what happens to his character leads into the rest of the movie.
Right. I mean, his being there definitely plays a pivotal role, but in terms of, like, his actual character doing anything, he's really just pretty much riding the boat.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he definitely is, his death actually kind of is the catalyst.
Yes.
Movie. Now, you actually... we're at Days of the Dead convention in Indianapolis.
July 2012, yes?
Yeah.
No, 2012.
It was 2012, yeah.
Yeah, this year.
You went there, and actually they had something kind of exciting going on. They had a whole Texas Chainsaw
They had the reunion. Yes, we met them all.
Tell me about, you actually met Gunnar Hansen, too. Did you remember saying anything to him about the movies, or... We're kind of sedgewaying now. Since this is a massacre show, we're going to just go right into
Texas Gunnar
Chainsaw.
Was very cool, very gracious, took photos with us. And it was a pleasure to meet him because the Texas Chainsaw Massacre was one of the early movies that I had watched that really scared me. And I saw it initially in black and white, and then it took on a new life when I finally saw it in color. But I remember being very terrorized, but at the time you couldn't see what he looked like in the outfit, but it was a pleasure to meet him, and he was very generous with his time and took photos with us, and we had a good time with him. And it was a pleasure to see him in this movie again because he is affectionately considered by all horror fans as one of the original, if you could call it a slasher, massacre-type villain.
Oh, absolutely.
Even though we didn't know who he was, Gunnar Hansen is an icon, and... his part in this movie was small, but it was important. And seeing him again this past year was a pleasure for sure.
Yeah, he was interesting too. We had had that we weren't at that event, but we did have some people that covered it for us, and they had actually gone to the Q&A. Did you go to the Texas Chainsaw Q&A?
I did.
And one of the things that they brought up, I guess that he had brought up, was how, because a lot of people were disappointed, like, why didn't he continue playing Bubba? Or why was his Bubba so much more frightening? He said it really isn't who plays Bubba. He said it was who writes the movie.
That's right.
And so basically, you know, because you've got different aspects of Bubba come out in different Texas Chainsaws, and God knows there's been a lot, because Texas Chainsaw had how many sequels? Remakes, and now another one coming out,
yes.
3D.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's had many incarnations, probably plenty more in the next 20 years to come. It's just one of those kind of movies. The original, though, is absolutely the best. It's almost like a loop film. I mean, it's that scary because you're watching it. And even Marilyn Burns, now you got to meet her as well, didn't you?
Yes, she was awesome. It was nice to hear her voice. That old voice that we all knew with the Texas drawl, she still has it.
And did you ask her any questions, or did she have any kind of insights?
I told her she's just as beautiful as when I first saw her.
Well, she's covered in her own blood. And
she was. I did. I told her. I said, I miss you without the blood.
Yeah.
I didn't recognize you without the blood, but that voice gave her away.
Yeah. She was saying in the one part where she gets kind of jabbed with the knife. Remember, she gets jabbed
in
the hand.
Oh, yeah, for real.
She gets jabbed in the hand, and I guess they had told her it was a prop that didn't work right, but no, they just jabbed her in the hand. So, you know,
the thing about this movie, Harpoon, is a little different in that the heroine in the movie, if you could call her that, she does get a little bit of revenge. And in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it's hard to say that that girl got her revenge. Although at the end, she is saved and seems a little bit
delirious.
Relieved, yeah.
Yeah.
But this is a whole new take on that.
Yeah.
So Harpoon definitely reminds you and has the flavor of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre in a remote location, which everyone would be afraid to be in. It certainly does add to the horror being out on the high seas, and certainly the end of the movie is not up-tempo at all, although the heroine does escape.
Yeah.
One of the other main characters, you know, there is another situation for them. So
right.
It's just a shocking movie. I think that's very surprising that it was done so well, knowing the level that we have, you know, in horror movies today, the level is not quite what it should be when it comes to the horror.
Yeah, and absolutely, this movie didn't even make it to the United States till like 2 years later, and it really kind of flew in under the radar. I think pretty much you could probably find it at Walmart for $2. So
yeah.
If you do, pick it up.
It's a good
it's
one.
Worth it. Absolutely worth
and
it.
And you know what? Whether you're drinking or not, it's good. But drinking helps because, like I said, it's just it really does take you on a journey, and you do feel the coldness. You do feel the atmosphere. It's shot very well, and certainly the scenes are mortifying.
Yeah, you don't have to kick back with tequila for this one. You kind of can go with a Icelandic brew.
Yes.
And that's good enough.
Yes.
Icelandic brew and some fish and chips.
Yes.
And you'll be good to go.
But, you know, any old way, it's a good old movie, and you should enjoy it. Another massacre movie that everyone should enjoy is a classic from 1982 called The Slumber Party Massacre. Those of us from that day and age will remember this movie for a lot of TNA, as well as a lot of great death scenes. An irritating but prominent soundtrack, as well as a lot of beautiful babes and some goofy guys. The killer himself was Russ Thorne, who apparently slaughtered a bunch of people in 1969 and escaped and wreaks havoc in one house. Basically, he starts wreaking havoc in a school. There was an actress, a famous actress, who appeared in this movie early on.
Yeah, B-movie scream queen Brink Stevens makes an early appearance here, and it was so it was weird seeing her so young. But she's pretty much one of the first victims out of the gate in the movie early on. But yeah, people that are big fans of that scream queens will definitely want to check this out if for that reason alone.
Sure. And you get to see a lot of great dated stuff. You get to see high shorts and high socks.
Oh, my God. I remember those days.
The haircuts. I mean, everything alone. Right from the beginning of the movie, you see boobies, if you're into that. A lot of girls dressing and undressing in negligees and nightgowns for that age. And, sure, you have the classic killer stalking girls in a high school from the high school to their slumber party.
It's interesting that you brought up all the boobs and babes, because this film was actually penned by a feminist writer, Rita Mae Brown.
That's right.
And it's so funny because this movie basically is pretty much a living testament to everything that a feminist is supposed to be against.
I mean,
the gratuitous nudity. Right out the gate, you have the main character basically just for no reason taking off her top and then throwing out her toys. So
yeah,
she's,
calling down
she's
to
not
her
a
mother
girl anymore. Yeah, exactly. I think the only thing pretty much feminist about it is was you have some female like construction workers or, you know, people that were doing that kind of thing. But other than, and the men, of course, are so incredibly weak.
Vacant. Yeah, they're vapid. But yeah, it starts out with the a female phone worker who is installing some phone for some phone company, and her van is stolen by the killer who wields a drill. And he ends up being the villain in the movie. Who stalks the girls and their boyfriends and the neighbors. Very much reminiscent of Halloween.
Oh, absolutely. And so many movies were back then. I mean, a lot of the slashers, the little-known slashers, such as this one, were really just Halloween ripoffs. I mean,
yes.
Like Offerings was another.
Oh, yeah.
That was probably even more an example
yes.
of it. But this one, certainly, you can definitely see that. I mean, almost there's almost, like, scenes that are just, like, deliberately picked up from Halloween and just kind of put in here. And just very reminiscent of it. Unfortunately, the music isn't quite to par.
They tried to pattern it against Halloween, but being in the early 80s, it's totally synthetic and doesn't have the punch, doesn't pack the punch. The scenes are almost predictable, but I will say this. The movie flows very well. You see the progress through the movie. You know what's going to happen next, but at the same time, you can't wait to see what happens next.
Yeah, and again, lots of gratuitous nudity, and there's violence. Of course, this is produced by Roger Corman, who is known for that. Roger Corman is known for taking a shoestring budget and basically making a silk purse out of a sow's ear, and this is pretty much a good example of that. He makes a decent movie.
Yes.
Right out of the gate, and it gives male fans everything that they want.
Lots of severed limbs, lots of blood.
Right.
Lots of drills through the eyes and chest. And
no need for strong male characters.
No, no.
None at all.
The females are definitely running the show in this movie.
Yeah, in every way, shape, or form, they do. But other than that, it is definitely a boob and blood fest. But it's good. It's a lot of. It's actually very watchable, very enjoyable. I really did like it, despite the Halloween ripoff qualities. It's still good. And, you know, if you got to rip off a movie, you may as well rip off Halloween, right?
One of the best scenes, there's a pizza boy who delivers pizza with no eyes.
And just kind of falls over.
Collapses on the floor, and later on, one of the girls grabs the pizza out of the box and starts eating it.
Yeah, that I liked. I thought that was a great scene.
That
it's like,
was
you know
awesome.
What? I'm sorry you're dead, but I'm going to eat this pizza. I'm hungry.
It's memorable, and yeah. It's laughable. And if you're drinking, you're going to laugh even harder, because this movie really does grab you. It makes you want to see more, not only of the females, but also to see what's going on next. The killer himself, I got to say, they could have done a lot better with him.
Yeah, I think you were right about that. Tell everybody, though, what you were telling me when we were watching it, because I think that is really spot on and really kind of is why movies like Friday the 13th and Halloween took, you know, really were so iconic. What is it that this movie lacked?
The killer's face has got to be hidden, folks.
Yeah.
You can't see who it is until the very end, and even then, there's got to be some mystery. Here, it's like the killer is a middle-aged...
Yeah, he looks like your brother-in-law.
Yeah, a blue jean jacket with a drill.
Yeah.
And you see him chasing the girl through the high school. A lot of the scenes and angles and the atmosphere is done very well. Even the music plays into it. They should have done it differently, in my opinion. However, the movie is still enjoyable, but what I think they should have done is...
Give the guy a mask. Yeah,
conceal
give him a mask.
Conceal the head.
Absolutely.
Don't show who it is. It looked too much like it was just your random janitor at a school trying to kill girls, and there's no story behind it except for the guy, you know, escaped from prison, which is exactly kind of what Michael Myers did in Halloween. He escaped from the insane asylum.
And came home.
And came home. There's no plot to this that we can tell except for the fact that he came into this school and decided to follow these girls home to a slumber party. We don't know why he did it. But other than that, the movie is totally enjoyable. The girls are hysterical. you get to see things that are totally dated, like people not knowing what to do with themselves at home, and they play the piano, they read the horoscope in the newspaper.
Well, and something becoming dated, like a plate of Twinkies.
They had a plate of Twinkies.
Soon to be obsolete.
They held cold hot dogs against the boy's eye when he got punched in the eye. I mean, it's just like, whoa. You know? They're listening in on other people's phone conversations, things you can't
do that
anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you can't lift the receiver and listen in.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of that for those of us who are of that age group. But really, the movie itself is a very, very well thought out movie. I think that the movie earns a lot of accolades. It's definitely a good drinking movie if you just want to party and have a good time.
And what drinks were they bringing to their slumber party tonight?
Oh, my God, they're drinking Michelob.
Yeah, and they also had some mixed drinks. They had the Kool-Aid and what
was
that?
Canadian Club.
How does that work?
It's actually Hey Kool-Aid, baby, with Canadian Club in it, and they're feeding it to the guys. And, of course, there's Michelob all over the place, which was the number one beer in America in the 70s and early 80s, which I still love, and it's hard to find.
Getting back to the female thing, though, too, I was really, in the beginning, I'll be honest, halfway through, I thought, okay, this is, you know, one of the girls clearly stands out as being sort of the goody two-shoes, so you expected her to survive.
The Laurie Strode.
But at the end, you actually had multiple women survive. Bad girls and good girl.
Yeah.
Bad and good. So they actually was more than one female that kind of saw it through, so that kind of spun that out. Because
saw it through.
Yes, well, drilled it.
She drilled
it
through to the end.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was kind of interesting. I did like that little spin. I mean, that was a little different than the norm for that kind of
yes.
a film, you know.
And the girl eating the pizza out of the dead pizza boy's box,
right,
was the clincher.
And this one actually spawned two sequels. Do you remember anything about those?
Well, a little bit. The second sequel had the guy laughing all the time. And I think he had
like
a mohawk.
Like how? Can you do
and
that?
He had a guy, yeah! I mean, it was like an Ace Frehley laugh. But he had a drill guitar, and he was rocking and rolling.
Oh.
Like, he was like Elvis.
What year did that come out, I wonder?
Man, like 87, 88.
Which is when a lot of those rock horror movies
came
out.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
well, that was the era.
Yeah.
And he was back again, but... that will be for another time. But this is an original old classic that we love and that we thought we would give a spin. And it is really, really an enjoyable movie. If you have never seen it, it's a classic. If you never want to see it again, at least you can say you saw The Slumber Party Massacre on Terror on Tequila.
All right, everybody, as a special gift to all our first-time listeners out there, we have a big bonus for all you guys here.
Yes, we do.
Actually, the big bonus is that we just saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre
in 3D.
2013.
Yes.
We just left the theater a little while ago, and we are now going to share with you our insights on the first horror film that came right out of the gate in the year of our Lord, 2013.
Yes, bless his name.
Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, this movie is almost a sequel. It's like it takes off from the end of the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie. You see scenes from that movie that remind you what happened. Sally Hardesty at the end escapes. Obviously, the police are called, and the police rush to the Sawyer home where everyone is holed up. Gunnar Hansen makes an appearance in the first 5 minutes of the movie, which is very cool.
Nice surprise.
Yeah. And they take it from there. Basically, there is a firefight between the Sawyer family and the local yokels who recognize that these people have been eating all of their relatives for years in their little mini slaughterhouse. So there is a firefight. There is an African-American policeman who shows up first, and he's like, I know what you're doing. Bring out the murderers. They have a firefight. The local yokels come out. They decimate the house. A lady and her baby escape from the Sawyer's house. One of the local yokels picks up the kid, basically leaves the woman for dead, takes the kid to his infertile wife and says, this be ours. So the movie surrounds this child that is taken from the 1974 original movie, which we never saw. So this child is taken away, raised by these other parents. 20 years later, the movie begins.
Yes, fast forward 40 years, and now you have the young girl is now a little hottie that wants to hang out with her little friends and get away from her white trash parents and finds out that she's inherited an estate through relatives she didn't know. So she's just beginning to find out what her true lineage is and heads over to Texas with a few victims. I'm sorry.
In a van.
Friends. Yeah. Yeah, in a similar van to the one that you saw in the beginning of Texas Chainsaw. In fact, I remember us at the theater seeing it, and Jason, you said, oh, my God, this is just like a remake. So it's almost it was almost like at first we thought it was going to be a sequel slash remake. Not sure how that works, but it actually did end up becoming kind of its own film.
Yes.
It did take on a different flavor than the other one slightly. As they get to the town and here at the house, they find out that they get a huge estate. So I don't know where the money came from, but somewhere in that cannibal family, there was some money. And so the girl inherits this beautiful house, complete with
Bubba
in the basement.
In the basement.
Bubba in the basement.
His name is Jed Sawyer. That's in this right. movie.
Yes.
And he is locked in the catacombs of the basement of this huge mansion, which is gated. The folks drive up. The attorney for this woman who has sent for this young woman sends her a letter saying, show up at this property, I will present you the keys. So they meet up with his attorney. He lets them into the house. The house is awesome. Things proceed downhill from there. The local mayor is one of the original local yokels who ended up torching the Sawyer house and assisted with the killing of most of the Sawyer family besides Bubba, who apparently escaped and lived in this house. The grandmother is played by
Marilyn Burns.
Yay.
We love you.
Yay. They overdubbed her voice, though. I was upset because I love that original Texas drawl. She's such a sweetie. I got to meet her last year.
Yeah, you just get brief images of her throughout the movie because she's kind of in flashback.
But she plays the part of this mother who has left this property to
the grandmother.
Yes, to the main character of the movie, who is a young girl who is about 20-some years old. Mm-hmm. She shows up, brings her friends into the house.
Minute. How does that work? How did Texas Chainsaw happen in 1974? And then 40 years later, you're 20. Got to use your imagination, I guess.
Yeah, it's a real stretch.
Because we're definitely in the year 2012 here, or 2013.
Sure. They've got cell phones, iPhones.
Yeah, yet this takes place right after Texas Chainsaw, which was 1970. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's see. How do you do the math there?
You're supposed to suspend reality for this, folks.
Can't do it, yeah.
Too many holes in the plot.
Definitely.
But we ignored that, and we went forward with the movie. The movie takes on a life of its own. I have to say the movie flows very well. Mm-hmm. The 3D isn't bad. Some of it is needless, but again, the blood begins to flow. Bubba is discovered and is let loose. And he is obviously unaware that this is his little cousin who has brought the people with her. So he decimates and kills all her friends. She gets discovered by the cops, who are also crooked because they are the families of the people who originally killed the Sawyer family. They know about these people. They have a vendetta against them, and the movie takes on another life there.
Yeah, this is one movie where you really don't know who to root for. Everybody's just horrible.
They're all
it's
villains.
It's just a bunch of terrible human beings on both sides.
Even the main character becomes a villain associate.
Not to give any spoilers, but kind of, yeah. I'm assuming at this time that you hear this that you've all seen it if you're going to. But here's the bottom line. You don't have to see this one at the movie theater. I think you can actually wait to rent it. True to form, it's not bad. It's certainly better than a lot of the other films in this franchise.
Yes.
I definitely enjoyed it a lot. Now, Jason and I have not seen a Texas Chainsaw movie at the theater together since Leatherface. Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, and that was, 1990?
Yes.
It? So this is, you know, us going to the theater 23 years later. And, you know, I would say that it's definitely worth renting. It's better than a lot of them, you know, but it's definitely not great. There's definitely aspects of it that you're going to be shaking your head. We were shaking our heads quite often.
By the end of the movie, you're like, this is ridiculous. I can't believe what's going on. But you are willing to sit through it. I'm telling you, people, this is not a bad movie. If you're a fan of the genre, you're a fan of the series, it's not bad. The action is pretty quick. It's so easy to follow. But at the same time, you're like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I wasn't too thrilled with the look of Leatherface in the beginning, but it did eventually kind of grow on me.
Yeah. He put on a different Leatherface.
You know, there's always a different flavor to Leatherface in every movie. I don't know quite how I would describe this one. I will say this. I thought that this Leatherface was more sympathetic. Again, that is one thing that we noticed. The first Leatherface was just a cold, hard killer. There was nothing about him that made you feel any kind of like, aww, You know what I'm saying? He was just a killer.
Except that his family members were almost just as or worse. They mistreated him.
True, but he was so scary and raw that you just went. When then after that, it kind of became more like a sympathetic figure. I would have to put this one as more of a sympathetic Bubba. I still don't see you know, just the killing machine Bubba that we saw from Gunnar Hansen's depiction.
Yes.
I've never seen that again really since. Maybe in the remake.
The first movie was relentless and brutal and obviously unique in many horror movies in that the actual actors got hurt. This was not fake. A lot of the stuff, a lot of the scrapes on the on Marilyn Burns were definitely real.
Yeah, and this is kind of the beginning. I mean, I know a lot of people talk about torture porn. I would say that the remake that came out a few years ago could have almost been put on that line.
Sure.
But if Texas Chainsaw Massacre is porn, then you would have to say that the original was kind of like the Betty Page. Because it really wasn't that graphic. And this one, I don't think was that graphic either.
No.
I don't think it was as graphic as I thought it would be.
Right.
Considering how the remake was.
Yes.
I thought this was going to be a lot more graphic. It really wasn't, and I'm kind of glad about that.
Yeah. They did focus on trying to trip you up with the story. The story is very easy to follow. I would suggest if you go see this movie in the theater, be prepared that it's not going to surprise you. However, I think the movie was done very well overall, and I enjoyed it myself.
Yes, and the bottle of tequila actually appears in this film.
Yes.
We would recommend that you bring that bottle with you somehow into the theater if you decide to go see it.
Yes, as always, we are drinking on Terror on Tequila.
Okay, continuing on with our night of massacre movies worth checking out. Another one that's very unusual, and I don't believe available on DVD, you'll have to kind of track down a copy, is Class Reunion Massacre, a.k.a. The Redeemer.
Yes.
This movie came out in 1976, and predating Halloween by 2 years, is actually considered to be an early homage to the slasher, but I don't know. I would have to say that this one is really kind of beyond classification. What would you say?
It's unto its own. It's a very strange movie involving a class reunion taking place in 1977, a 10-year reunion for a very small group of people who were invited to a high school where they graduated, apparently a high school, and are lured there to be killed by a mysterious killer and his cohorts in this school. The movie begins with the title, "From out of the darkness, the hand of the Redeemer shall appear to punish those who have lived in sin and return to the watery depths of hell." So it's basically addressing the seven deadly sins in each of the slayings in this movie. Apparently, the six or so people that are brought back to the school represent one of the seven deadly sins. The seventh person is the killer, who represents, obviously,
wrath.
Wrath.
Yeah.
The wrath of God.
Yeah.
He's calling down on the Redeemer is going to punish these people for their sins. You're never quite sure what they ever did to the person who's killing them, but you look back, the beginning of the movie starts with a child coming out of some water.
Yeah.
There's a person, a priest with six fingers. He's got two thumbs on his hand. That's prominent in the movie. We have never, ever figured out exactly what this all means, except for it does have to do with the seven deadly sins. They're quoted in the movie.
And ironically enough, I mean, it's interesting that you're bringing all this up, because we have watched this movie several times in the last 20-some years, and this is the first time we actually really kind of got it. That was the last time we watched it together. That extra thumb kind of appears and reappears, disappears. This is almost like, and I know you had mentioned it when we were watching it the last time, that it's almost like a supernatural slasher, if such a thing could exist.
It has to do with the vengeance of God on people who commit sins. There are flashbacks in the movie. There are dream sequences, sort of, fantasy sequences of sorts. The beginning of the movie takes place 10 years before the movie is supposed to take place. It's a 10-year reunion at a big, old, dilapidated school where these six people are brought in from different walks of life back together. They all recognize each other. They knew each other from high school. They're led into this huge school that is empty. It's an old school, and they proceed to walk through the school. They see that there is a large spread of food set out for them, as if there was going to be a larger party, but they're the only ones invited. It's got a creepy premise, but from there, it just gets bizarre.
Yeah, like you had said also, I think you had mentioned the 10 little Indians or and then there were none kind of yes. thing was going on. But getting to, okay, the plot's kind of, it's very kind of difficult to follow. So you may not get it when you watch this movie, as we didn't get it many times. So why did we keep watching it? Well, I'll tell you, because actually the horror aspect is pretty darn good.
Yes.
There's some interesting death scenes, really creepy imagery. Mm-hmm. A lot of like just bizarre props, dummies, and the killer actually kind of is a Lon Chaney, Man of a Thousand Faces kind of thing. So actually takes on a different look for every killing. And they're all kind of creepy because they're just very disconcerting appearances. So I really would have to say that for predating the slasher era, this film actually is pretty good as far as like carrying on some interesting death scenes. I want to say it probably was more of a grindhouse type film. The quality was very poor that we saw on the one we had, but of course it's a transfer. I don't think it's ever going to be released. I think this is just kind of like one of those drive-in movies. So
there are elements of Dario Argento. It's almost like it's not an American film. I don't know much about the background of the film.
True.
But it has the dreaminess and some of the film, the actual filming of the movie is not bad. The camera angles and the angles inside the school are very interestingly done. The death scenes, again, are very interesting to see. Not quite seen anything quite like it. But, again, it's so hard to follow. You're not quite sure until the very end what exactly is happening. But, basically, it's a bunch of people that are brought into a school and are knocked off one after the other in front of each other. Which is a little frustrating because you're like, come on, people, why are you just lingering around this school? You never do understand, but it seems like they're locked in the school and they can't get out, and they're each wondering what the hell they've all done. In fact, they say it in the movie, what have we done? What did we do? And they question each other. And you're supposed to, at the end of the movie, try to figure out which of the deadly sins these people represent.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, they had some were very clear. You know, like gluttony yes. was pretty obvious and, you know, pride. But I would have to say that you're right. A lot of them, it was kind of shady. And you really looked at them like, wow, this is the best example of somebody with this representing this type of sin that you could pick. I mean, even the one that was gluttony, he was eating a lot, but he wasn't really that terribly overweight. You know,
all the characters were actually pretty likable. So they weren't obvious in their sin. There are some points at the beginning of the movie that you really have to pay attention to if you're going to be able to follow it. You almost need to rewind the movie a few times before you can actually get it. But we have gone through this movie several times. We do enjoy it for the gore's sake, for the horror's sake, but it has been a difficult movie to dissect. But I think we finally figured it out.
Yeah, I didn't really appreciate some of the homosexual stereotypes that were going on in this movie.
Yes.
But again, you know, this is mid-70s.
Mid-70s.
You know, if you kind of look at it from a point of view as just, you know, take it for something very unique with elements of horror that certainly are of value, then it's worth a look. It's worth checking out. I don't know if I would check it out with too much tequila, though, for this one, because you might want to be clear-headed and try to figure this out first. But actually, you can enjoy it either way, because I don't know if the movie makes any more sense either way. What do you think?
I don't know. I think we've seen it drunk and sober, and I don't know that we've ever been able to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the closest we did was the last time we saw it. So, you know, I guess it took us to get into our 40s before we finally got it, but we did.
Well.
But it's a good one as far as it's unique. I mean, like I said, it is definitely worth checking out if you're looking for something different. Definitely has some horror merit to it.
Absolutely.
Well, we've definitely run the gambit with the massacre movies. What do you think? We pointed out a few that probably, hopefully, at least a couple here that you have not heard of before and may check out now. Also, since we did deal a lot with slashers, it's probably a good time to talk about some of our resource materials. What do you think?
Yes, absolutely. What do we have on hand?
Well, a lot of people rely solely on the internet for their information, but, you know, there is something to be said for the written word. So we're going to highlight a few books that you can check out of if you're new to the whole slasher genre and you want to look at it again. I wouldn't recommend going and checking out a general horror book because they're just going to say they all suck. So I would say specifically go find yourself a slasher book. And the good news is there's a few to choose from. One is a little bit difficult. It's called Legacy of Blood. It actually highlights 200 slasher films. It's by Jim Harper. I want to say it's out of print, so you'd have to kind of go and hunt one down. But if you do, it's definitely worth it. Another one that's come out that I actually, the next two, actually, I just got as a Christmas gift from the other Dave, David Alba. The first one's from J.A. Kurzweil. It's called The Slasher Movie Book. This one's got a lot of great visuals and posters and some good information as well. But the one that I'm really happy with that I was also given as a gift was the Slasher, actually, it's the Mammoth Book of Slasher Movies, an A to Z guide to more than 60 years of blood and guts, and actually includes a lot of even recent slashers. This one's by Peter Normanton, and it's readily available at this point. So that might be a good place to start. Not any pictures. It's all written word, but definitely check that out. And we hope you enjoyed our show. If you got anything you want to, parting words you'd like to give our listeners out there, Jason, for our show?
We hope that you all enjoyed the reviews of these movies. These are excellent horror movies. Any way you slice it, they are awesome movies. If you are a fan of B-movies or the best, these are very entertaining if you're drinking with terror on tequila.
And if there's anybody else out there that knows of any movies that you think we should be paying some attention to or give some... pay some homage to, please drop me a line at terrordaves@ymail.com. We'll be happy to check out anything you point our way. We'd sure appreciate it. Thank you so much, and we are signing out.
We are always here to comfort the disturbed and to disturb the comfortable. Listening.